Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Commander and Coffee. Hopefully this one's not giving you deja brew. Today with us, we have Cypher.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And why?
I like the way you introduced me better. I'll just leave it to you.
And you already know who I am. I'm Cork. And today we have a neat little deck called Vadrick, brought to you by everyone's favorite Storm player, Cypher.
Everyone's a bit of a miss, but I'll take it.
Listen, just take it, dude. Like, I'm complimenting you. You don't get that very often from me.
Take yes for an answer, Cypher.
But before we get into that, how's everybody doing? What's new? What's new in the world? What's going on? How about your little world?
Mine's been pretty busy. Traveling a lot for work. Keeps me pretty busy. So I've been kind of dealing with that. Outside of that, in the Magic space, just been looking at different formats to get into. On my quest to continue to play a Storm combo deck in every format, I've been really looking into Modern lately, and I've really become a big fan. I used to play Gift Storm a lot, which has a lot of connotation to today's episode. I feel like it's really awkwardly positioned right now, but I've been really a fan of the new Neobrand, Neoform, Gristlebrand deck that's popped up in Modern. It started out kind of clunky, but I think some of the newer innovations have made that kind of cool. So I've just been trying to goldfish and jam games with that deck to see if it's something I want to move into.
Yeah, just like with all brews, it takes time. So just giving it time to just kind of help work itself out. And the community is very good around, especially the Modern space, just like in CDH. And they put a massive amount of time into that.
That was a very good point for me to follow up by saying this is going to be the punny episode because Cork's leading this discussion.
Oh, absolutely. So why, can you espresso to me what your week is like?
Yeah. Yeah, I will. Okay. let's see. I'm playtesting with literally half a dozen Pauper decks right now to figure out which one I want to be on, because if I scrub out on day one of Punt City, then I really, really am looking forward to the day two Pauper side event. So I'm going to be bringing Pauper with me. I am absolutely going for the gold. But in the event that doesn't work out, then I want to be able to fight on day two to get a little bit of glory out of the weekend. So that's my plan as far as Magic is concerned. And then I'm just trying to play some more disc golf while the weather is still good. Magic isn't the only thing I'm trying to do. And I feel like having a balance of other pieces of my life make me a better Magic player. So yeah, trying to keep a balance of a couple things going on.
Love it. I mean, that work-life balance is really important in everything.
Neither of those were work, but okay.
Magic and well, I mean, that's not it work still at goes all. For the same thing. Listen, Magic is work, and so is disc golf, because you're putting the work and you're putting the effort in, and that's still a mentally straining thing.
That's fair. I mean, I'll take the credit, sure.
As for me, softball's winding down. I'm getting pretty much done with everything. It's coming up towards the end of the year for me, and I'm excited to just kind of go back to doing trivia and name that tune and just going back to my usual, hermit shell.
It's been a low injury season for you, Cork, hasn't it?
So it's actually funny that you mentioned that. Just today I was playing a game and I turned a double play off of the ball getting hit off my stomach and into the shortstop's glove as he was coming across second base to turn the double play. Everybody just kind of stopped, looked at me, went, did you plan that? I said, no, not at all. But yes, I did. I'm going to go with that.
Nice.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's like Roosevelt being shot mid-speech. He's putting it all on the line for us for the podcast today. So thank you for being here, Cork.
Thanks. So, Cypher, Vadrick, could you brew help me with this?
Oh, this episode's going to give me gray hairs. Oh, my God. Yeah, Vadrick. So, Vadrick's a really sweet deck that I'm really excited that we get to talk about today. It's definitely a brew that I've been working on for a bit. As you guys know, I really like Storm, and one of my favorite decks in Modern for the longest time was Gift Storm, where you utilize Gifts and Given and Manamorphos and Pyretic Rituals and Past in Flames, and you just generate a bunch of mana and a bunch of Storm, and then kill everybody with Grape Shot.
That was my intro to Modern, actually.
Yeah, it's a really sweet deck. Unfortunately, things like Ragavan get printed, and Solitude and Grief, and you know, the power level has they've added tons and tons of powerful cards and haven't given anything to Giftstorm. So it's sort of very fringe right now. It's a fun deck, but I don't think it's the same level as what it was back in the day. So I wanted to play something similar to that. Obviously, Gifts is not legal in the format. You can't cast Metamorphose in a blue-red deck, and you don't have multiple copies of spells to build up a huge storm count, and grapeshotting a table of 40 life is definitely challenging. So I was looking, and I came across this card from, I think this is from the Midnight Hunt one. It's one of the two new Innistrad ones. I'm not sure which one it came from, to be honest. I think it's Midnight.
Yeah, it's Midnight Hunt, because it has the werewolf.
Yeah. Vadrick. So what Vadrick does is he's one a blue and a red for a 1/2 human wizard. And then if it's neither day or night, it becomes day as Vadrick enters the battlefield. So you're using that werewolf day and night mechanic. To be honest, it's cute. I don't care about it that much. But what I do care about is instants and sorceries cost X less to cast, where X is Vadrick's power. So essentially, he's a Baral or a Goblin Electromancer in the command zone, which is really cool baseline when he comes into play. But where the day and night mechanic comes into play is whenever it becomes day or night, I get to get a +1/+1 counter on Vadrick. So essentially, I'm able to heavily reduce the cost of the colorless cost of all of the cards in my deck that are instants and sorceries by utilizing Vadrick. So that was kind of step one into the building blocks of the deck. And then step two was trying to find the ways I can win. So in the same token, where I can't use something like Gifts Ungiven to search my library for a couple of cards, have my opponents pick them, I can play Intuition, which is not legal in Modern because it's so old, and does functionally the same thing. In some people's eyes, it does better things than what Gifts can do. That's a debatable question for another day. So essentially, I've constructed, as we kind of go through this deck, I've built my own Gift Storm in Modern as we go through there. So that was the plan. That was the intent. I sleeved up the deck to play it. I thought I was going to be casually high power fun. And then I found out that the deck's actually kind of absurd. It can do a lot of crazy powerful things. It doesn't do them as well as other decks can do. I definitely think there's better decks out there, but this deck is out of left field. It's hella fun. Nobody knows what you're doing until you're dead.
Yeah, it's really a brutiful blend of multiple different things, almost like a house blend of cards of Modern, Legacy, staples that tend to make things go off the wall.
When this episode's over, I hope you guys comment the number of coffee puns that he's utilized in this episode. I want another count.
On my initial skim through the deck, I mean, I'm not the one building this, but like, kind of more of like a layman's eye looking at this list that you have built. You have the slow version of increasing Vadrick's power through the day-night cycle. I see you also have ways to kind of cheat that out with these, I mean, not necessarily giant growth, but things that increase Vadrick's power, even just for the turn. These giant growth abilities are functioning as a ritual in your list.
Oh yeah, there's such fun. Like this is playing with cards that are kind of wonky and weird and win the game. One of my favorite cards in the deck is called Sudden Breakthrough. It's from Strixhaven, but it's 2 mana. Target creature gets +2/+0 and gains first strike and create a treasure token. So with Vadrick in play, it just costs a red mana, right? So it's red mana and it replaces itself by giving you a treasure. It basically like pseudo dark rituals, right? Like dark ritual, when you cast it, you net 2 mana off of it. This does the same thing. And it's funny, as you cast Sudden Breakthrough and then the table's like, yeah, I don't care about that. They don't realize that because I let that resolve, they're now just dead. They're now just 8 levels of dead.
Yeah, this deck seems to have a magic number, quote unquote. If Vadrick reaches that magic number, the game's over. And I think the magic number is 3 power, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, 3 power unlocks a lot of things you can do.
I love your combo linchpin being a 10th pick draft common. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, so this deck, there are some really cool strengths and weaknesses to the deck list. It is a storm combo deck, so you're going to be casting a lot of spells on your turn. So keep that in mind when your group is heavy with stacks and Rule of Law style effects. It does make the deck challenging. And the deck is very much utilizing its graveyard. So again, if somebody's got an Archon of Emeria and a Rest in Peace in play, you're not saying you can't win. It's just the easy mode has been turned off. It's a lot harder to win the game through the use of this deck with those cards in play.
But we see from Modern and Legacy that a gift storm variant has always been a staple in these formats for a long time. People do run graveyard hate despite there being a storm deck in the meta. Just having the hate isn't enough sometimes. Being able to effectively deploy them against fast combo decks, I mean, that's why CEDH has successful fast combo, because sometimes, a lot of the time, you are simply fast enough to beat it. You have enough counterplay to those answers.
Correct. And we're a fast combo deck too. We're a little slower. Again, we're trying to roughly get Vadrick out on turn two, right? Like turn one, you're trying to develop your mana. Turn two, you're playing your Vadrick. Turn three is an interesting cycle in this list where you really don't want to do anything. Like the higher level is you cast Vadrick and you pass, because that automatically will then force your opponents to either respond there, or if they just pass, that'll cause the day-night to flip and get you that power, which is important because then in the next turn cycle, chances are somebody's going to cast two or more spells, which is going to trigger that flip and get you to that third power. So realistically, by doing nothing and letting your opponents play, you can get to that three power necessary just by letting a turn cycle go through. So there's also that line there. And then once you untap on that fourth turn of the game, is pretty much when you're like, all right, door's open, let's push and go for the win. So it can win earlier if you can develop mana and get Vadrick out on one and then do the shenanigans, but that's typically where you're at. Is about turn four is where the deck wants to win, which is pretty standard for even to tie into its predecessor of Giftstorm, which is typically winning about turn four in Modern.
So a question I have in the context of knowing what else you're on. I know that both of you, Cypher and Cork, you're both really big on the Karkashima or Kark variant deck lists out there. You've both been on them. You've both played them to some success. And you seem very confident in playing those decks. What led you to building this deck, which maybe not necessarily has a lot of overlapping key cards, but at the very least, I feel like it has an overlapping play pattern. So how would you say that Vadrick is a diverse deck from a Karkashima list?
Great question. So a couple of ways. One, what made me move on to this deck is Kirk Sakashima is a storm deck in the sense that you are doing the storm things. But it's also a little different. As a longtime storm player, like, you're casting spells and you're rechaining and you're going through. So you're kind of doing that same thing. But you're a lot more luck reliant in that deck because you're really hoping to hit flips and trigger flips and kind of do the motions. That, like, it true to form, at the end of the day, I honestly think that's a bread and butter piece of it. But, like, you're not really, like, focusing hardcore on that. You're looking to assemble a bunch of creatures and find it. It's a lot of non-deterministic stuff. Whereas something like Vadrick is, number one, it's lower key, right? We all know there's been a lot of debate in the Magic community over Kark Sakashima. Is it good? Is it bad? Some people genuinely just hate the deck, right? They see it and they're like, I don't like this deck. I'm going to punch you in the head because I hate this deck, right? Like, I'm just going to target you. I don't like this deck. So it has that bad connotation to it.
Yeah, there's a whole big brouhaha over it.
So that kind of led me to wanting to look at other things. Genuinely, this is me saying I love Vadrick. I do think Kark Sakashima is probably more powerful overall. Not saying this deck is bad or underpowered. It's just that I think, like, in a blind meta event, like, you're looking to play the most powerful things, I think Kark Sakashima actually edges this deck out in the patterns that it can do. But it's a unique deck that doesn't really have an NOI. This kind of sticks in your role. You put a Vadrick in play and no one's going to take you seriously for the first couple of turns until it's too late and they're already dead, right? You're going to play Vadrick and they're going to be like, what does this do? Oh, that's cute. And then you're going to play Sudden Breakthrough and they're going to be like, what does this do? That's cute. And then they realize they're just dead. Like, there's nothing more they can do. Game is over. I've locked it up. It's done deal. Thanks for playing. Come again, right?
Yeah.
So that's what kind of moved me into this line. And there's a couple of cards in here that are my pet cards that I just really like to play and I wanted to play, like things like Past and Flames, right? Which aren't genuinely seen as very good and not very good even in the Kark deck, that I just wanted to brew around because I think their cards are powerful.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, why? This is kind of your headspace too. When you look at these type of decks, you want to go off the wall. You want to basically sit down at a table and nobody wants to take you seriously. They want to look at the the Tana Timna deck and the Thrasios Timna deck and, you know, Thrasios Krom or Winota or, you know, Najeela deck and go, oh yeah, I'm more scared of that person than that person over there. Like Vadrick, I don't know what that does. I'm going to read it and then push it back. It can't do anything to me. It's just some homebrew. And then look at those ones. And next thing you know, you got some trouble brewing.
Yeah. I want that stealth bonus every game I can.
Yeah. I mean, like somebody puts like an Ad Nauseam, a Jessica's Will, you know, everybody knows what these like powerful cards are on the stack. And they're like, oh yeah, that thing needs to be countered. You get a lot of people asking a lot of questions when you put up Pirate's Pillage on the stack. And everybody goes, what the hell does that do?
Yeah. Like, what's the important card to counter? Right. I agree.
Yeah. How good is this? And they don't know, like, this is the card, right? This is, if this card resolves, I'm now set up to kind of go off. And they don't know what that's doing when they're doing it. So that's a cool thing about the deck.
Or vice versa. They're wasting removal and counter magic on things that are not key pieces, which is just as good in many cases.
Yeah, so we pretty much talked a lot about how the deck performs and how crazy it would be. So, like, how are you living La Vida Mocha?
Okay, so there's a lot of...
expose this man. I'm looking over. He literally has a list of coffee puns.
Absolutely. I am not this clever.
Off his monitor, yeah. He's ready. He's just ready to read them off.
Just rip the curtain back.
Yeah, it's really just the perfect blend of everything.
Anyways, so how the deck wins is kind of convoluted. There's a lot of process. This is one of those decks that has multiple steps, multiple phases, multiple opportunities. So as with most Storm decks, you got to like to think and be on your feet. But the two one-card win conditions we have in the deck list that are really powerful is Intuition, like I talked about, where you can reveal three cards and then you show them to your opponent and you tell them, I don't give a crap what you give me, you're dead. The other card that's a reader is another card from Strixhaven called Fervent Mastery. Now, I'm sure none of you know what this card does, so I'll read it to you. It's a 3 red-red, so 5 mana total sorcery, that I may pay 2 red-red rather than pay the spell's mana cost. So it lets you cheat it by 1 if you really want to. If the 2 red-red cost was paid, an opponent discards any number of cards, then draws that many cards. So I'm not really into that function, but what I am interested in is its actual effect, which is search your library for up to 3 cards, put them into your hand, shuffle, then discard 3 cards at random. So essentially, this is Intuition number 2. It actually gives me a second copy of the card. It's a little different that I shuffle and discard, but again, with Intuition, I don't care what you give me, I'm going to win the game. It's the same thing with this card. I'm going to shuffle whatever I discard, that's fine. It doesn't matter. It's all irrelevant. I'm just going to win the game from here with these 3 cards on the stack. So those are kind of like what you're trying to do. And then with Vadrick in play, you know, Fervent Mastery costs red-red and Intuition is sitting at just a blue. So then you're able to kind of go off from there with what you get.
Yeah.
Which is really
cool. Love that about decks like this, where you can quite literally just go, I'm going to slam down this Intuition and there's 3 cards that I'm going to show you, that no matter which one you give me, the game's over. The staple example is Underworld Breach, Savine's Reclamation, and Lion's Eye Diamond. That is like the staple example of, hey, I don't care what you give me, I'm still winning. So
yeah.
Do it.
I'm going to win no matter what the result, and one of the three of you is going to feel particularly bad about it.
Right, exactly. But don't target the green player, because then you can get Veil of Summered.
Yeah, and speaking of Breach, we actually do play Breach in this deck list. And one of the neat things about this deck list is we're not on LED, specifically because there's not a lot of value for LED outside of having the Breach combo. Because like we don't really want to fully discard our cards from our hand or go negative in cards.
Yeah, I guess Vadrick doesn't represent card advantage per se. It's just like an engine.
Correct. But we don't need that because with Vadrick in play, a Underworld Breach and a Lotus Petal, our Brain Freeze only costs blue. So Petal is automatically casting the Breach for free. Even a naked Vadrick with no counters on it or anything will let you just infinitely cycle the Breach and win the game from there. So you don't need the LED for the double blue anymore. You just can go off with Petal.
Yeah. So we talked about getting to the combo and getting the 3 cards. What exactly is your kill? What's your win?
So there's a couple ways to kill. The key card is going to glue this whole rest of this conversation together is another very powerful CEDH all-star, Reiterate. So what Reiterate is it's one red for an instant, and it has buyback 3. So I can pay 3 additional mana, and if I do, I get to return the spell to my hand as it resolves. And what it does is it copies target instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. Now, this is where Vadrick having a power of 3 is so important, because he can pay for the buyback cost on Reiterate. So now Reiterate reads one red, copy target spell that makes me mana or draws me cards, and continue to do that. So having a Jeskha's Will for a red mana and then casting a Reiterate for one red, generating me at least 3 or 4 mana, lets me infinitely cycle Jeskha's Wills to draw my deck, exile my deck, generate a crap ton of red mana, continue to go off that way. You have things like Seething Song in the deck that lets you generate infinite mana through that effect. And then you have cards like Drown in Dreams, which draws your opponents out. You have Stroke of Genius. And then finally, you have a card called Electrodominance. Again, another CDH All-Star, which is X red. Electrodominance deals X damage to any target. You may cast a card with converted mana cost X or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. So essentially, you can make a copy of that, buy back the Reiterate. The copy resolves. You put the Reiterate back on the stack, copying the Electrodominance again, putting and buying it back, and just continuing to kind of cycle through those avenues to just kill the opponents through that way. So basically, it's X spells, and the 3 X spells that I have chosen are Electrodominance, Drown in Dreams, and Stroke of Genius.
Yeah, it's really just, for a non-coffee pun, it's a beautiful storm of cards. It really is. Like, the fact that, like, now your X spells cost less, all, like, casting a Jeskha's Will for a red mana is, in my personal opinion, bonkers. It kind of gives me, way back when, before we started getting into CDH, one of the staples of our deck list, or our decks, were Mizzix, with the experience counters that does the same thing as this does, as Vadrick does. In my opinion, does it better. Vadrick does it better.
Yeah, he does a lot of neat things. Like I said, with Vadrick on 2 power, you basically, with Intuition in hand and 2 blue and 2 red mana, you win the game. So what you do is you Intuition for Past in Flame, Seething Song, and Sudden Breakthrough, right? And then from there, you're just basically cycling those cards, generating more mana. You're getting something like a Pirate's Pillage, which lets you draw more cards and create and generate treasure mana, because Vadrick, it only costs red, so now it's actually making you mana. Frantic Search does something similar. And then the other unique card that's really cool in this deck list is the dual card Invert Invent, which... We don't care about the first half. We care more about the instant speed invent half, which for 4, a blue and a red, lets you search your library for an instant card and or a sorcery card and put them in your hand. So for blue and a red, you get an instant and a sorcery to your hand, which is something like a Jeskha's Will Reiterate, right? Sorcery and instant, and then lets you kind of go off from there to generate infinite mana, draw your deck, and then, you know, stroke, Drown in Dreams, Electrodominance, whatever you want them out of the game from there. So it's convoluted. We'll leave a link to everything in there to show you all the lines, because there's a lot of variations to what they give you and how you execute the combo. But that's kind of the rough gist of how we're getting to what we get through. So again, it really harkens back to that modern Gift Storm, where you're casting a bunch of making a bunch of mana, using your Past in Flames, using it to make a bunch more mana, building that up, and then tutoring out the win from there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tall order to remember it. It's not quite as complicated or as many steps as like the Anala Spellseeker line, which is 20 plus steps, or some other decks that we've talked about or decision. But it's very, very heavy on the decision making. I actually played with Cypher in one of our Two-Headed Giant events around here. And he was on this, and I was on black-white Yoshimaru Tevish. And at one point, we sat there and went, I looked at table, I looked at his hand, and I went, oh, you just win. And he's like, no. And I'm like, no, we just do da-da-da-da. And between the two of us, we were able to piecemeal the win together off of just, like, the limited knowledge that we had, per se, of the one card in our hand, which I believe was Invert Invent.
Correct.
I think it's also worth appreciating, based on this list, that outside of the combo, I think Vadrick has a lot of utility in the same way that Brawl has a lot of utility, that when you're not going for the win, just having a cost reducer on your cantrips, on your counter magic, on your removal, and on your wheels You just have a lot of great digging potential. You always have a game action that you can deploy without worrying about your mana cost. So, I just really like that part, that you're not only able to execute your combo, but you're able to effectively dig for it while holding up interaction.
For those that are a little more into the EDH space, man, spending 4 mana to overload a Cyclonic Rift is really fun.
Yeah. It's nice.
It kind of breaks the card. But yeah, you're not as heavy in the control role. You can play that role, but a lot of your deck is focused around trying to, you know, put the combo together, as most Storm decks are. You're not fully invested into, you know, having a bunch of counter spells in the deck list because they're usually pretty bad for you overall, but you can pivot to that role. Not to mention that it's what's interesting about the deck list too that I want to bring up is they're +1/+1 counters on Vadrick. So Vadrick just gets bigger. So things like Ragavans, things like Timnas, things like Najeelas, like you're just not really getting attacked that much anymore when you have a Vadrick that's got like 2 or 3 counters on it in play because it's just too big. It gets out of the way of a lot of like burn damage removal too, which is nice. So it kind of gets out of scope there and then kind of protects itself in that regard, which is nice. I mean, it still loses to all the other types of removal, but being able to kind of get around some of that stuff's kind of cool too.
So before we go too far past this, it was the number one question I was going to ask you. Do you think that you could build this as a full-on hard control list? I mean, in theory, you could build this like a Baral with the addition of red.
I think there's a space for it. I haven't dived into that scope too much. There's a version of it that exists. I think the version of it that exists is significantly worse than this deck, or like a Baral kind of deck. Because what Baral does is he's also giving you card draw by letting you like kind of loot when you counter a spell, whereas Vadrick is just reducing costs. And there are a lot of counter spells that are kind of heavy on pips. You know, like counter spell in and of itself doesn't benefit from Vadrick at all. It's a non combo.
Yeah, and I suppose the counter spells that say draw a card, they're very cost ineffective without Vadrick in play. So you are leaning very heavily on your commander at that point. Higher ceiling, lower floor.
Yeah, blue red as a control deck typically has always been just like a tempo kind of control deck, right? Where you're, you know, think of like blue red delvers and all that stuff. That's kind of where blue red fits in the control space. And the problem with that in EDH and CDH is like there's 3 other players, so it's really hard to kind of play that role.
Yeah, I guess the best example is like Niv-Mizzet, right?
Yeah, like Niv-Mizzet's probably the closest thing because you can play board wipes and like Niv-Mizzet's uncounterable. And again, the fact that Vadrick doesn't give you card advantage, I think, is the biggest piece of the puzzle, right? The Storm decks, we don't care that much about card advantage. We have ways to generate that. We do care about it, though. I'm not saying we don't. We really do. But the fact that he gives you mana advantage is what's more critical to me from a Storm deck perspective, because that allows me to continue to do what I need to do to win the game, right? Versus something like Niv-Mizzet, which is generating you card advantage over card. Like, you play a counterspell, you're drawing a card, you're killing creatures with it. It kind of fits that role a little better, I think.
Yeah, I think that's good insight, because This really wasn't my project. I know this was kind of somewhat of a joint adventure between you and Cork. Were both of you kind of all in on the Storm strategy from the beginning on this idea?
Yeah.
I mean, the Storm space is obviously Cypher's, you know, forte. Mine is just to, you know, go, hey, that seems neat. Can I understand this? Okay, yeah, this is fine. This works. Yeah.
We played it in a two-headed giant event. And we just kind of threw a deck together for him that played silences really well, because that's kind of what I wanted to have. That's kind of like the one thing that this deck wishes it could use, is something to just shush the table so you could just kind of win. Because again, you're not really on a lot of counter spells. You're kind of casting your combo, you know, blind into open mana if you feel like you have to go now. You do have some play to it, so I'm not saying you're forced into that, but you're kind of just like, yeah, you're going to jam and see what happens. So the pairing wasn't even that great. It was just 2 pairings, and Vadrick was just like, yeah, I'm just going to carry us. And he did in fact get some early combos, and you know, the silence has helped from Cork a lot too. I think in the one game we fought, Vadrick had to fight through, God, it was like 5 silences turn after turn. Cause I just had the win, and they knew it, and they had just kept silencing me to try and slow me down. And it wasn't enough. We just were able to continue to you know, grind through those wins.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite Two at a Giant match that I've probably ever played. We battled through five silences and still came out on top by outplaying our opponents. And it was just the most perfectly crafted win and feel good win, to the point where I reanimated one of their ranger captain just to silence them back to show them what it's like. Cypher and I tend to, when we play our Two at a Giant events, we tend to just go, yeah, who's gonna win this time? Is it gonna be me or you? And then sometimes we'll actually just battle each other while we're trying to combo out. It's kind of our thing.
Yeah, so yeah, we do that a lot. It's funny. That was the first time we ever partnered in Two at a Giant. I forget what we were playing, but Cork went to win, and he put the winning card on the stack, and in response, I comboed over time.
Yeah, we just basically race a lot of the times. Speaking of racing, you know what's getting my heart racing? This coffee. He's over here flashing a light when I use a pun.
Negative reinforcement.
So, but for real, what's that was actually a segue into the coffee segment. Just so you know.
Well, we're here now. Let's get this over with.
What are we drinking today? Why?
We are drinking, going within the theme of the day and night cycle. I started my day with dark roast, and I had an after-dinner espresso. Just like a Starbucks espresso, nothing crazy. Just wanted a little something, stay in character for the episode.
Standard, everyday, Starbucks house blend Italian roast espresso. Was good. It did exactly what the espresso did. It's kind of why I'm a little hyper, not going to lie. But hey, here we are. We already talked about Fervent Mastery. We talked about cards like Electro Dominance and Invert Event. Another card that I want to talk about a little bit is Recoup and Mystic Retrieval. They both function almost the same, but you don't see those too often. Tell me a little about them.
Yeah, so they're part of combo lines in and of themselves. Like I said, there's combos for days in this deck that you can try and pull from, as well as being just good value cards. So you can kind of attempt to win. If they try and stop you, you can kind of buy them back and try and keep going later on to try and find the win. Like I said, the win is pretty self-explanatory with the strokes, the brain freezes, the Jessica's will reiterate, which is what you're trying to get to. So every piece is just trying to get that. For buyback, it's really challenging to get you're not on green, so you don't have Noxious Revival or Eternal Witness or anything like that. So worst thing that can happen is the reiterate ends up in your graveyard, because then once that's in your graveyard, it's like possible to get back. You can't Past in Flames buy back off of a flashback. Fortunately, it goes to exile. So we had to find unique ways to make sure that one card ends up where we want it to be. So Mystic Retrieval and Recoup are fantastic cards to kind of help that. Mystic Retrieval being the one that gets back. Recoup kind of lets you cast sorceries. So if your Jessica's Will gets milled, you kind of get the opportunity to give that card flashback, which is really powerful. Until the end of turn for one red mana, and then your Jessica's Will is another red mana, and you get to pop off like that. So you can do crazy things like that to kind of help you go off from there.
Lo-fi cards to combo and vibe to. I'm going to see myself out.
Thank you.
Not if I see you out first.
So why? I don't know about you, but did you take a peep in the enchantments down there?
I was going to say, it doesn't look like we moved to TikTok as our platform, because it sure looks like we're chasing clout.
I'm the only sane one on this podcast. Yeah, so I guess we'll talk a little bit about Clout of the Dominus. This is a very unique line, so I wanted to have a card that can get Vadrick to 3 power for the lowest mana cost possible without having to do the standard line of... Because some of the times you're not going to have the time to just not cast a spell on your turn, pass the turn, hope people don't kill you or win the game, but while casting two or more spells, and then the turn gets back to you. So Clout does a couple of great things for the deck. It's actually one of my favorite cards in the deck. Is it pumps Vadrick to a 3-4 when it enchants it, which is absolutely cool. It also gives it haste, which I do not care about in the slightest. It literally is wasted text on the card to me. But what it also does is it gives it Shroud. So by giving it Shroud, basically protects it from all of those awful removal spells that are going to try and kill it before I can combo off. none of that stuff's going to happen. I'm free to go, and I'm able to just kind of win from there.
Or if you have the opening, you also survive a turn cycle versus like a Gilded Drake or other common sorcery speed answers that you might run into in a common pod.
Yeah, 90% of the time, not all the, it's not for guarantee, but if Clout's on the board and equipped to Vadrick, I'm more than likely untapping with Vadrick on that next turn, because like it's just so hard for to actually find a line to get rid of the Clout. Like somebody has to bounce the enchantment and then kill the, like there's just a lot to ask to do that. So it really requires the table to come together. And again, we talked about how no one's really like, it's a Vadrick deck that put a enchantment on it to give him haste and make him bigger. Like, what's this guy doing? And then you're like, you're just dead. That's fun. There is a downside to the card, though. The other card we talked about, Sudden Breakthrough, that really makes the deck hum and is a critical part to the combo, can't be cast if you're going with Clout, because the creature has Shroud, so it does work that way. But you can target your opponent's creatures, so you can keep going with it. You just can't target your Vadrick anymore. So you can't target Vadrick with Sudden Breakthrough, but you can't target your opponent's creatures, which makes me really like the Clout in the deck and think it has the viability there.
Yeah, because you really don't care if you're giving your opponent's creature +2 power, because you ain't swinging it anyway.
Nope.
Any other noteworthy cards that we should be on the lookout for if we ever see a Vadrick across the table? I mean, Selendi Vision is kind of neat.
So Selendi Vision and Valakut's Awakening are two very powerful cards. Selendi Vision being obviously, you know, it's a land, which is great if you need it to be. But for one blue mana to look at the top 6 cards of your library, reveal an instant or sorcery, and put it into your hand. Be like a one mana Peer Through Depths, or, you know, one mana like Impulse kind of thing. Instant speed, kind of like it's all just really cool into what it does. So being a land or being that spell is pretty good when they're being discounted by Vadrick. And then Valakut Awakening is a sweet card. So it's a red mana to basically Wheel of Fortune just yourself with the card, which is pretty cool. It's another card that goes infinite with Reiterate to draw our deck, because you can choose 0 as the number, and then you draw one card. So you can kind of cycle that as well as a one mana cantrip, if you need it to be an instant speed cantrip, or you can use it to kind of get those clunky lands that are in your hand, get them the hell out of there, and get some actual gas. So that's another really interesting card that's in the deck list and some neat lines you could do with it.
I really like how we're coming off the Carrick episode, and this is almost like the half-brother of Carrick in a lot of ways, as far as like your decision-making goes, because whereas Carrick has an utter disregard for black mana pips, you have an utter disregard for colorless mana. So I feel like you're kind of doing the other half of the coin as far as what you're able to cast, what you're able to reduce the cost of during your turn.
Yep, whereas Carrick's looking for like mana crypts, mana vaults, and stuff like that. Those cards are actively, outside of casting like Vadrick, they're pretty bad in the deck, to be speaking. Like, this is like low-key one of the decks where like, I'm playing it and I'm not going to cut it, but this is one of the low-key decks where like, mana crypt's not the greatest card in the world. It doesn't help me cast a lot of things once Vadrick gets going, but it helps you get to that point, which is just busted and why it's in the deck list, because we all know it's a broken card, but like, it's not like helping me kind of transition to where I want to go. I really am more invested in things like Pyretic Rituals and Desperate Rituals and stuff to get me the colored mana that I need.
Oh, another one I wanted to add on to the discussion for you. I feel like the number is going to be kind of high. Have you found yourself casting the front half of Seagate Restoration a lot with this deck? I feel like the 4 colorless mana is no problem, but blue, 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 double your hand size might be really good in here, I feel.
Blue, blue, blue is a challenge. I'm not going to lie. Blue does not have very many ritual style effects. They're mostly in red that you're generating. But yeah, it is not uncommon to have a Seagate in your hand that only costs triple blue. And then when you get there, you draw a whole bunch of cards and kind of go off from there. And then it is mostly used for the land, but it is very powerful in the sense that you can follow that line and just, again, for triple blue, just, you know, Seagate Restoration and draw a whole bunch of cards. One of the few decks that can actually cast the card, I feel like. I think most decks play it for the land. This deck does actually have the capabilities to fire that sucker off.
The deck is just silly. I love it. It's unique. It attacks it from a different format. It's a fresh take on blue red. I mean, we always see Karkashima, like we Weiss said before. You know, you always see it around. You always see a Niv-Mizzet every so often. You know, it's a pure storm deck in its brightest sense, in its, you know, whole sense. Holistically, it's a storm deck. And what's really cool is it's deterministic. You don't have to worry about, you know, like slow play or anything like that. You're like, well, if I do this, I'm winning 110%.
Yes. And I love the basis of this deck being a gift storm deck by another format. If there's one thing we appreciate on this podcast, it is a single origin brew. So great job on working this through, Cypher and Cork.
Mainly Cypher, but I was here for moral support and going, you probably shouldn't play that.
I think the closest card to the last card I'm going to talk about that we can get into hands that fits in that like high expensive, like triple color cost spell is Mizzix's Mastery. It's probably one of my top favorite cards in the deck. It doesn't get used as often, but when it does, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm akin to Candy Star. I like was like back when I started playing EDH, like I played EDH for long before the Commander precons came out and stuff. But when they did, like, I loved the Mizzix deck and I loved doing the Mizzix things. But Mizzix Mastery just being red, cast every instant and sorcery card in my graveyard is just so much fun to do. Like, you just go Pyretic Ritual, overload Mizzix Mastery, and then recast Pyretic Ritual plus everything else that's in your yard, and you just get to go off.
Yeah, the good old Timmy Storm.
You have some pretty neat cards in your considering section here as well. I know we don't usually go into it too much, but I'm kind of curious as to why you didn't choose some of these. One of them is like Desperate Ritual or, you know, Recurring Insight even.
They're not in here because like the primary engine with Reiterate combos requires three mana with Vedric at three power to function. So in order to use Desperate Ritual or Pyretic Ritual to win, you actually need Vadric at four, which is again an extra ask to get than three. Three is really easy, four is challenging. So that's why a card like Seething Song took its place, because the five red actually lets you net mana off of it with the Reiterate line.
Okay. I get it.
Over that. What was the other card? Haze of Rage? Oh, Haze of Rage. Haze of Rage and Reckless Charge. These are other variations of Sudden Breakthrough in the fact that Reckless Charge being one red, target creature gets +3/+0 and gains haste until end of turn and has flashback for two in a red. That lets you, you know, pump that Vadric up. Like this one specifically gets him up to four power, right? And Haze of Rage, you know, it gives you +1/+0 and it has buyback for two and it costs two, but it also has Storm, so like it can get super big. The reason those aren't in the deck is because, again, I want to be lean and efficient in what I do. And Sudden Breakthrough, giving me the mana back in the form of a treasure, as well as the like kind of like ritual effect, is huge. Because, again, we're casting spells that do have a requirement to cast a colored pip, right? Whereas if I tap out completely and cast a Haze of Rage, yeah, or a Reckless Charge, like, yeah, my Vadric's going to be huge. It's going to be like, you know, a 4-4 to like potentially like a 10-10 or something like that. But if I don't have another colored mana, I can't do anything. I'm kind of stopped. So Sudden Breakthrough lets you go off like half a turn to a turn earlier than those cards because it buys back the colored pip in the form of the treasure token, allowing you to cast the ritual to kind of keep the ball rolling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that absolutely does.
My all-star in the considering pile, collectively speaking, is Shuko, Sigh of the Shinobi, and Bonesaw. Just having a single colorless giving Vadric an extra point of power is beautiful. I can't speak to the viability of these cards, but man, I hope they're good enough one day. I love them.
Yeah, they were close. They were my dark rabbit hole that I went down, because for both of them, both of them don't cost you a mana realistically, right? Because you're playing them, you're using one colorless pip to equip. As long as it's not a colored pip you're using, they're essentially free, because you're putting them on the Vadric, and now your instants all cost one less equal to that one you just generated. So they're actually, in some senses, netting you mana, right? Because if you play
strictly better than Sapphire Medallion,
in this deck, kind of, yeah, actually. Because, and I'm not saying they're like that much better. Don't go specking on bone saws, listeners. That's worth your time. Shuko's was already expensive. But yeah, it does turn into a medallion like effect once you slap it on Vadrick there, which is something I was interested in playing. And again, it's free, so it lets you kind of pop off.
Oh, too late. Foil Shuko is $22.
I would say Shukos have already spiked. Bone saws are cheap. I think they're like under a dollar for the foils, but Shuko's got some dollars associated with it.
Love it. We're making it spike before the episode even releases. All right. I think that's enough for caffeinating. Let's get to hands.
All right. We have our first opener with Vadrick. I'm going to read off lands first, followed by everything else. We have a Shivan Reef and a Cascade Bluffs. And with that, we have Arcane Signet, Clouds of the Dominus, Brainstorm, Electro Dominance, and Reiterate.
So this is an interesting hand, and this is it's weird to do this on the first hand, but this is one of the hands that I'm interested to see what you guys think about this hand first. We obviously have two lands, an accelerator, we have a clout to make our Vadrick pretty big, and we already have Reiterate Electro Dominance in hand, which is the combo kill condition with a Brainstorm. So I'm going to pass it off to you guys and see what you think.
My vote is pitch this, mainly because you're looking at most likely a turn one Brainstorm, and with no way of cracking said Brainstorm, you're going to get yourself Brainstorm locked, and you're just going to be sad because you're not playing Vadrick until turn three, turn four, potentially.
Cork, we're thinking literally the same thing, because the one thing that would have sold me on this hand is a fetch land.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, right off the bat, I immediately put back actually the Electro Dominance and the Reiterate if one of those lands was a fetch land.
Ding ding, you guys are correct. So this hand looks amazing, right? You have everything you want. You have mana, you have a mana accelerator. Granted, Arcane Signet's not really an accelerator, it's kind of slow. You have a way to immediately pump Vadrick to 3 power, and you have the combo in your hand. The problem is it's a very slow setup. You're talking turn 3 Vadrick with clout, but then you have to untap and then hope to get there. So like, you're really banking on Brainstorm being like amazing, and if it's not, again, you are Brainstorm locked. So you're not quick enough for this style of deck. If you were playing against like insanely heavy stacks decks, right, where it's like stacks on stacks on stacks that are not trying to kill you like Winona, I would maybe consider this type of hand, because it's not bad, right? You have all the pieces you need. You just need to need the time to assemble them. But I think you can do, as a first seven, I think you could do so much better with this hand.
Yeah, no, especially being your first seven, you could 1000% mulligan for free here.
Yeah, let's find a better seven, shall we? Okay, here's what we got. We have a Snow Mountain Training Center, and we have the Blue-Red Flipland River Glide Pathway. And we have Seagate Restoration, Intuition, Past in Flames, and Stroke of Genius. I don't see any kind of ramp here. It looks like another slow hand, probably a six.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
Yeah, so you could definitely get a better six than this.
Okay. Our hand of six is Flooded Strand, City of Brass, another Seagate Restoration, Springleaf Drum, Spellseeker, Pirate's Pillage, and Electro Dominance. It keeps coming up.
I don't like this hand. I would mold a five here.
This one is tough. This isn't a deck where you can like mold to Oblivion. You do kind of want to keep some things going on. That being said, you can only cast a Springleaf Drum on this hand or an Electro Dominance for zero, which is very bad. So holistically, yeah, you're probably... I guess you have the Seagate. You could technically cast Spellseeker.
So the line, if you were to keep this hand, the line that I see is, at the very least, on turn three, you can cast a Spellseeker. And then using Springleaf Drum, you can cast a one-mana spell that you get with said Spellseeker, whether that be like a gamble or a cantrip or something of that category. So your turn three is all right.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is you're not on Vadrick at that point, because like you're spending your third turn to cast Spellseeker. So that would have to be, you would have to assume at that point that you're kind of moving more into the breach line win, which is fine, but then that means you're kind of like spell seekering for gamble at that point, and you're gambling that you're going to keep the breach in hand, and then you have to find, like, you'd have to get like the pirate's pillage to hopefully draw you into the gas to get there. Yeah. Like, that's, it's asking a lot. So I probably would mulligan this hand, but I just don't, it's just tough because, like, you just really don't like mulligan that low in this deck.
Yeah. I'm confident in your deck building. Let's go to five. I believe. Okay. So this hand includes a snow covered mountain, a wooded foothills, a misty rainforest, a mental misstep, windfall, intuition, and stroke of genius. So you can either go the windfall route or the intuition route, depending on how your draws develop, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, you kind of have to make the decision for pitching at this point. I would, there's a gambler's line where you keep the three lands, you keep the windfall, and you keep the intuition, and then you just kind of play off what your deck's telling you to do by drawing. But the scary part with that is then you're binning your intuition, which is one of your one card win cons. Again, you have ways to buy it back, but you're still dumping that card. Versus you could also just put the intuition on the bottom, grab the misstep, try and stop some players' fast developments with tutors and soul rings and stuff like that, and then just try and resolve your own windfall on turn three to try and hopefully buy yourself back into the game, because again, you're mulled pretty low. And to go off from there would be pretty
cool. Yeah, I kind of think that might be like your only real option with this hand. It is slow, but yikes.
Yeah, this is Storm 101. Some of the times you bank on the windfall resolving, it resolves, you untap, and then you win the game. I mean, depending on the board, you can also go like really slow and you can cast a turn three Vadrick and then like cast a one mana windfall later and draw a whole bunch of cards. At that point, I would probably just want to be more on leaning on intuition to win the game.
All right, let's see our next seven.
Yeah, that was a good one to unpack. Okay, so this opening hand includes a River Glide Pathway, a Bloodstained Mire, Shatter Skull Smashing, Stroke of Genius, Fervent Mastery, Rhystic Study, and a Jeska's Will.
Again, you have a lot of, like, really good cards in your hand. Fervent Mastery is a one card win. Rhystic Study is fantastic. Jessica's
and no way to get great to them.
You do have the three. You do have the three lands to cast them, to cast everything with the Shatter Skull. It's just like really slow. Like, it's another one of these awkward hands where, like, if this was like a second seven and like I felt like the table was pretty slow, I would be like inclined to be like, yeah, you know, it's fine. I'll just you know, build up to the Rhystic and get that online, and then, you know, see where we go from there. But again, turn three Rhystic is a lot worse than like turn two Rhystic, because everybody's already deployed all their fast mana from there, but like it still gets the job done. So like there's notion there. And then obviously, you know, you get Vadrick out and your Jeska's Will is online, your Fervent Mastery can set up the win from there if you can get some power on him. So like it's not a bad hand. It really isn't. But like, I just feel like we could do better. We get some mana rocks and do,
yeah,
some,
I agree. I think this would be stuff. A mulligan. It's nice, but I think it's a trap hand.
It's a great six. It's a great five. Just meh.
We have a little bit of a gambler's hand, but it has a lot of backup. So
yeah.
Let's read it off. We have a, for our second seven, we have a Shivan Reef, Shatter Skull Smashing, Valakut Awakening, Ponder, First Totem, Fierce Guardianship, and a Force of Will.
So this is interesting. This hand is really great if Cursed Totem is really good in this pod. So like if you're facing a bunch of like Thrasioses or like a bunch of decks that, you know, creatures are going to have activated abilities, this hand's really good. Like if you're playing a bunch of blue farm decks, you're like, it's okay. But if you're really leveraging the power of Cursed Totem, being able to go like turn one Ponder, try and smooth out your draw, and then if nothing else pans out, just being able to like Shatter Skull into Cursed Totem, and then follow that up with like hopefully you get a land, and then you can hit the Valakut Awakening to you know, start doing some things from there, or you could even turn it into a land and get your Vadrick online. And then you have Fierce Force potentially back up, and then just kind of like stall out the game from there. So it's, I think keeping this hand depends on how good Cursed Totem is in the pod. I think if it hits one player and shuts him off but doesn't affect the others, it's a tough sell. It's not bad, but I think I could do better on six. But if Cursed Totem is just like the nuts, like it hits two to three players, I'm probably more invested in something like this.
I do really like the Ponder here, though. I think that's kind of what, that's what puts me on the side of keeping it just barely. Because, I mean, with Ponder, with your draw step, you get up to five looks at finding your best piece, right? For this current opening.
The Ponder is what all makes the hand keepable. Like I said, I think the determination is are you fully reliant on Ponder or, like, are you relying on the Cursed Totem? Because, like, not saying people do, but, like, it's one of those things, like, if somebody randomly just counters your Ponder, like, and you don't have a blue card, like, I guess you'd have to force pitching Fierce to, like, have the damn thing resolve. Because, like, you're so reliant on the Ponder, which is just, like, not exactly where you want to be.
At the same time, though, I like that you're not, it's not really, it's not quite a desperation Ponder either. Like, you're not pondering to find a land, which I think is, you know, kind of being on your back foot. You're pondering to find action. You're pondering for a proactive spell, which I think is a different mindset to be in than pondering to find a land.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And the nice thing about it is, like I said, you have the Valakut. So, like, if you're not hitting lands, your Valakut Awakening becomes the land you need. But if you are hitting lands, Valakut Awakening is able to, like, just clean up the hand altogether and just say, now we're gonna draw a fresh set of cards. And kind of go from there.
Definitely a risky keep, but I'd say probably a keep nonetheless, depending on the strength, like you said, of Cursed Totem. Very pod specific. Let's get another one in here. All right, so our next hand up, we have Valakut Awakening, Muddle the Mixture, Jeweled Lotus, Cursed Totem, Ponder, Prismatic Vista, and Snow Covered Mountain. Thoughts, opinions, semi-angry threats of this hand?
So this hand's actually kind of cool. It does some unique things. It obviously casts a turn one Vadrick, which is really powerful. But then what it can follow up with, depending on how the hand goes, is you can utilize Ponder to try and smooth out your draws, or you can just simply do your turn three play of passing the turn on turn two this time, a whole turn earlier thanks to the Jeweled Lotus, and just letting Vadrick grow, which would automatically turn on your Valakut Awakening for one red that you can kind of instant speed, you know, shuffle away the rest of the hand and see what you get. I would probably lead on the Vista for an island to try and hopefully hit spike another blue source to turn the Muddle on as well as another form of counter measures. But if you don't, it's not the end of the world. Again, having the mountain guarantees you that the Valakut's Awakening will kind of turn online and be able to go from there. And then Vista obviously can turn on the Ponder if you're more inclined to just kind of ponder for right now and sculpt the hand a bit, you can do that as well. Cursed Totem's probably more or less a dead card in this hand based off of what the hand texture is. But again, if you are facing against a whole bunch of people that are playing activated ability decks, like if you go turn one Vadrick and then everybody plays like a whole bunch of dorks and you're like, all right, well, I'm just going to untap, tap, cast a Cursed Totem. And there's a strong chance I may actually be able to flip Vadrick a couple of times in the turn cycle. So that's kind of where we're at there, I think, with this.
Yeah, I kind of like it. It's just risky enough to have that, like, gambler's problem there where it's like, yeah, I think I'll risk it.
How bad could it really be with turn one Vadrick, right? You're deploying a lot of things that you're drawing. I think that the worst case scenario of this hand is still fairly high in the openers that you could be seeing.
Yeah, and your draws are explosive too, right? Like, I mean, it's not the most explosive draws in the deck list, but it has a lot more tools in the draws than other decks, because you're trying to just be as explosive as possible with this deck. So there's a lot of high opportunity that the cards you can draw on the next turn or two could be pretty proactive. They could just be lands too, but
you have a lot of looks at stuff.
Yeah, but then again, the more lands you draw, the better, because the more lands you draw is just more things that Valakut's Awakening is going to convert into potentially actual spells.
So. Yeah. What do we say? One more?
You insist.
All right, we got an interesting one for our last one here. Kind of curious to hear our thoughts. Scalding Tarn, Mana Crypt, Springleaf Drum, Muddle the Mixture, Drown in Dreams, Stormkill Nardist, Delay.
This is also a hand that can be, like, potentially just, like, hard cast a Drown for X equals, I don't know, 5 in a pretty quick fashion.
Yeah, you can also like just draw a bunch of cards too. Like, it's fine because like you, but like I said, like the neat thing with Muddle is like it, like if you go like Vadrick, right, and you get Vadrick online, you're left with one floating mana, which is just the awkward. That's the awkward part of this hand, is that it's colorless because like you want the second blue, because like the turn you pass when you're not doing anything, you could discard this Muddle to go and find Merchant Scroll. Because that's not casting a spell, so that lets you use your mana on the turn you're Vadricking.
Yeah, value drown. Mm-hmm. What I also like about this hand is that you have more outs than just drawing a land. Because if you draw any 3 CMC or less creature that you can cast, you have the Springleaf Drum to float mana that way. So yeah, you have additional outs remaining that isn't just that. Yeah. I like playing the odds. It's certainly not a perfect hand, but I like playing these odds. Let's fight for Valhalla. You said that the tournament prize opener, this is a ship hand. This is a mulligan. So let's go for it then. Let's mulligan.
For our second 7, we have Intuition, Bloodstained Mire, Mox Amber, Snow-Covered Island, Sol Ring, Shivan Reef, Rite of Flame. This looks like a pretty good second 7 here. Cypher, what do you think?
Yeah, this hand's insane. This is exactly what you want to do. This is a turn 2 Vadrick into a turn 3 pass into a turn 4 win. Perfectly set up. This is the Nutso Busto.
Ah, yes, the Nutso Busto.
I believe the medical term is testicular torsion.
No, I got 2 hernias. I'm good.
But yeah, this hand's just insane. Like, there's nothing much to say. You go turn 1 Sol Ring, turn 2 Vadrick, turn 3 nothing, turn get him up some power, then Intuition for Rite of Flame, Intuition, 2 blue, 2 red, you win the game.
Nice. Well, guys, I do believe that's a wrap. Anything you want to shout out? Anything you want to say as some final parting gifts to everybody?
Shout out to everybody that made it through the episode and didn't cringe at every single copy made today. You guys are my people.
Shout out to the people who love my coffee puns. You guys are the realest.
Bravery is not cringing. Bravery is watching the episode despite the cringe.
All right, and with that, guys, I'm Cork.
I'm Cypher.
My name is Y. You can find our deck lists in our own little mini database that you'll find in the episode description. Please leave feedback. We are, still in the experimental stages, so any kind of feedback that you might have, any advice, anything you like or don't like, we will absolutely be taking that into account. We want to be better for ourselves. We want to be better for you. And yeah, let's keep going on together. Thank you.
Keep on keeping on. And I'm all out of coffee.